Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Looking forward to tonight's show in a perverse sort of way. And we've got two great mourners in the studio, as I said on Twitter earlier. Yeah, yeah. Well, apart from me and Gareth, Craig Clark and Martin McFadden.
Hiya.
Hello.
This is going to be more entertaining than the game, perhaps.
Well, it
wouldn't
take
much, yeah, would it? Yeah, job done already. Yeah, that the box has been ticked. Can you ever remember a start to the season like this, Martin, where fans have felt this disillusioned after one home game?
I think the first season under McMenemy was equally bad. I think they lost the first four or something. But I try to erase that from my mind. But it's certainly up there. I mean, even when we were terrible in the sort of 19 and 15 point seasons, we weren't getting like hammered every week by, we were like losing 1-0 and 2-1 and stuff. But we're kind of giving these games up before we even get going. I know Leicester, we could have possibly scored once or twice before they like destroyed us, but apart from that, it's just been crap.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know there's a comment from outside now that's starting to come in from the national media, and the comment on the Sunderland fans leaving early and stuff, and they're almost mocking it, or they're certainly questioning it. But you mentioned the 15-19 point seasons then. That didn't happen then because the players were giving everything, weren't they? Mm-hmm. And they were putting tackles in, they were tracking back. That's all fans want, firstly.
I think there's been like a build-up, hasn't there, of I think with those seasons we'd just been promoted and there was kind of like more of a positive feel that everyone was in it together, and you could see that maybe players like, I don't know, Collins or whoever at the time, like, weren't good enough, but they were given 100%, like you say. But now, we were saying before the show went out, you know, it's like it's a team full of internationals, yet you can get someone like Watmore come on and like stand out for his effort. I know he's got something to prove, but they all should have, you know.
Well, that's it. It's the job at the end of the day, isn't it? Can you explain, Craig, players not putting tackles in, not tracking back? I'm not sure I've ever seen this before, this sort of...
Especially level. When you see someone like Cattermole just sort of seemingly give up before, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes in. He's not very interested. Larson, you can usually never fault his commitment. He doesn't always play brilliantly, but he's usually at it, and he was not really anywhere to be seen, was he? And you start wondering, well, what's going to motivate them now? You should be motivated yourself as a professional, but yeah, there's something else going on there. You don't see players like that who you could hang your hat on for a couple of years at least, to at least give you 100%. All right, every now and then the level would drop, but they would be trying. Like Cattermole, even after that debacle against Villa, where he sort of gave the goal away and we lost 1-0 at home, he still showed for the ball. And I mean, he was getting caught on his haunches. I think there's a lack of, possibly a lack of fitness about them as well. It looked evident.
Possibly.
Well, we've seen, like, Cattermole always seems to take a few games to get into it. If he comes back from a suspension or an injury, he's always off it for the first few games. But
well, he wasn't last season, was he? He scored in the opening games.
We were saying a lot of people were calling for him to be moved forward a little bit, and that's happened because Envy sat quite deep and tried to orchestrate things from back there. And yet, while we praised Gus Poyet for turning Cattermole into that sort of hole of midfielder, it's perhaps looks as if it's gone too far now, and he can't readapt.
He looks
a little bit. It's a bit of the headless chicken scenario.
I don't know whether he needs that extra bit of, you know, whatever they showed at the end of every season, whatever they seem to show at the end of every season, that extra bit of like sort of impetus or like motivation and stuff. And I think for Cattermole to actually come out and do the interviews that he's done since, you know, for them to be featured on Match of the Day and like so prominently, I think that he's actually like asked, like the likes of Louise Wanless to like whether he can do that, you know, because like the way it's all organised, you know yourself with the media these days. If he was going to say something like that, he would have said like, I actually want to come out and like say these things. It's almost like quite refreshing. I mean, you can read into some of the things that he said. They're quite dark, but I think him and Larson have both signed like quite long contracts in the recent past. And I think they've both been given promises of investment. You know, like Advocaat was like, I'm not coming back unless there's... We know we need six quality players, you know. And like, we've signed one.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Mm. Yeah, and he's probably thinking, I want to go back to Kiev. At least it's warm there.
I want to go to Kiev.
But it's right though, isn't it? Because players are going to be like fans. These same players are just avoiding relegation by the skin of their teeth every season. They're going to want new players to come and improve the side, just the same as fans are.
Well, I think the other part of the worry is, I know it's links and I hate reading into them, and I've tried to like avoid as much of the transfer stuff as possible, but the sort of Januzaj and Barini links seem pretty solid.
Yeah.
And you look at that type of player and think, why are we trying to bring these in? We need a strong midfielder, strong centre-forward, probably an entire new back four. And you just think, I'm not really sure why you'd want to bring Januzaj in when Giaccherini, I mean, I don't know why he wasn't involved on Saturday, but and he's not been perfect, but surely he's better than some of the players who've been getting the nod ahead of him.
I don't know if he's better than Januzaj and Barini. And there's something that worries me is now is that obviously these deals are going to get done at the end of the month if they get done, and then they'll look at it now and say, well, we've got off to such a bad start. Like, I don't want to go there.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but it seems to be happening already, doesn't it?
They've got the rest of Europe to choose from. It's not just like Stoke or Palace. You know, if you were a player with no emotional attachment to Sunderland Football Club, like, and you looked at the league table and looked at the way they play,
and watch much of the deer,
you'd be like, yeah, like, not going there.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's that's the punishment for not. It was bad enough when we had Di Canio here and he didn't even bother with pre-season and they weren't ready for it, and then we lost. Was it 5 in a row or something like that? And then he got sacked with no points on the board. But at least we've actually prepared this time, and we've got a manager who isn't clinically insane, but we've still started off as bad, you know?
If not worse.
Yeah.
I mean,
he will be clinically insane in a few weeks. He will be clinically insane in a few weeks.
Like us.
I think the rest of us,
But until we get this midfielder, though, you just touched on it. Giaccherini, Gareth, what are your thoughts? Because, I mean, we're desperate for a creative midfielder. Until we sign one, we probably aren't going to sign one, let's be honest. Well, you would just surely have two from Catamar Larsson and Villa Rodwell sitting with Giaccherini ahead of him. This is an Italy international, and Villa's a French international. These are prominent countries. You know, these aren't mugs, these players. Surely we can come up with a way to make this midfield work better than it is at the moment.
The only thing about Giaccherini is, like, you know, this is his third season now, isn't it? And, like, can you say he's been a success in the time that he's been
here? He's injured a lot last year, though, wasn't he? Yeah, I know he's been a bit hot player, fantastic, but
it's not whether he's a success per se.
Has he proved that he's capable of playing in that role?
Well, my concern would be more that the allocation of resources is so often wrong at this club that although he might not be the best at that position, there's a much greater need to improve elsewhere that you would rather just stick with him than bring in someone like Januzaj. I just don't. I mean, it's not going to happen. But
he keeps saying he wants to play in the middle anyway, Giaccherini. That's what I'm saying. Could you not have two of these? If Catamore likes to sit deep and Villa likes to sit deep, and then Giaccherini.
Just have Villa and Catamore or someone just sitting in and then have him in front.
Yes, exactly.
But, at least what you can say about Giaccherini, he might be hot and cold, but he's a technical footballer. Like, he can handle the ball.
He
can handle the ball.
A forward pass, which we need.
Well, that's it. I mean, I suppose it opens the topic is did we play our best, strongest team on Saturday? And, you know, I would have had O'Shea in, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt.
We've already sort of said Giaccherini, if he is fit, then he needs to feature more, especially with, like, AJ out and then no other creative players.
That's it.
You know what I mean?
There's not that well lens, I suppose, but you got to wait and see. You know, I was talking to Gareth on the way down, and he looked really good against Doncaster, but I was loath to read too much into it, because if you read into his performance that it was good, you had to read into how bad the rest of them were, and lo and behold, that unfortunately continued so far. But at the same time, it's one thing impressing in pre-season, it's another thing when you're actually in the sort of physicality, the pace of the Premier League's a lot greater. And he's looked good in flashes, but he does look like it's going to take him 5-6 weeks to get up to speed. And in that time, the way things are going, the players around him are so shot that he's going to be at the same sort of level anyway, mentally, isn't he?
It's a dysfunctional team, isn't it? You know, like even if you bring in a good player, are they going to perform? Because the games are over before we sort of get into our stride so far. So, however good you are, you're not going to shine. You're not going to develop.
It's just we mentioned off air, Craig. Then you just touched on the players he's targeting, the Barini, Januzaj, people like that. And it's surely just common sense that you start with the spine of your side first. Now, he could argue bringing Kabul in and Quetta's that he's tried to do that. I'm not sure any of us thought that would be as disastrous as it has been, to be fair. There's an argument that we thought Rodwell would be better than he was, and he was a centre midfielder he signed last year. But you can't rely or you can't wait for him to come good. And that should be, before you go out and get your lenses, surely you try and sort the middle of the park out first.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like there is no spine, although, you know, a lot of people have spent the summer saying how good Catamol is and, you know, how he should be captain and how he's, like, our best player. And I think when you haven't lost a game for ages and seen the sort of deficiencies of the team, you know, if you're talking about a spine, you know, you could sort of say he signed the centre-halves. The keeper's as good a keeper as we've had for a while. And then you've got Catamol. He's brought... You know, he's brought other players in that can play in that position. So it's he might argue that he's only missing that key striker. But I get a bit sick of all of these deals being done after the season started.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in pre-season? And we might save a couple of million on a player becoming available later on. But like, how much is it worth finishing two places further up the league? It's worth more than that couple of million that you might save on a player. Why not like?
Have you seen Reddy and Rare in the court?
Yes. I know it seems like too obvious, but
well,
why not?
We've gone in a pre-season where some of the players can't get there to play, for starters. In Van Aanholt and Johnson didn't get to America, did they, for whatever reason?
Yeah.
Obviously couldn't get visas or something like that. And then they arrived in Canada. They've had gone all the way to Canada to play one game of football to come home. It's. I mean, we've talked about it before.
And you look at Leicester
and
Norwich, don't you? Who stayed at home?
Well, I don't think it's. If you go to America for 3 weeks or something, and there's a bit of value in it. Going for ten days to play three games.
And there's America, isn't there? I mean, you know, like California to Toronto.
Oh yeah.
It's like different countries and different coasts, and you know, they may as well have gone from there to Australia. You know, it's like. For the people that did all three games, you know, it's like a round the world trip, really. You know, it's I don't know how long the flight is from California to Toronto, but it must be like
good
8 hours.
At least five, six hours.
It takes it out of like professional footballers, and like what does it do commercially for a club like Sunderland Football Club?
Nothing.
You know,
like this debate,
there is no debate because it does literally do. Like I know what you're being a bit facetious, but like it does nothing, does it?
There's no commercial revenue
in the North American territories for Sunderland until they're a club that's in the top six, which is never going to happen.
When you consider all the money and sort of the different levels of employment you have now to try and make sure your players are in good condition and stuff, it's surprising the clubs take this approach, isn't it? Because, you know... Not at the moment, is it? No, but I'm saying
everyone's
that there's that amount
the
going into the sports science and everything now that you think, like, somebody would just... have a little bit more autonomy to say, look, this isn't a good idea, for the players' conditions. We need to hit the ground running and hit the season running.
We know that's not the case anymore. We know that that's not the case. It's not important anymore. The football is secondary to everything else.
The fan zone was our main signing in the summer, wasn't it, according to the PR coming out of the club?
That's what it feels like, doesn't it?
the football is now irrelevant, and it's across the game in its entirety, from the transfer window... is almost like more important than the actual football.
Well, think how much
who are you going to sign? How much did they cost? Who is it? What's the name?
What's the rating on FIFA?
Yeah, how good are them FIFA? How good are them? I mean, you know, they're using football.
No one cares anymore.
They're using Football Manager stats now on Sky Sports News to say how good a player's going to be.
I know someone's already made this joke, probably, but you know, it's better than what Paul Merson's got to say.
Paul Merson's got to say, yeah, probably is, but. It's just it's a case of, you know, it's all about how much money clubs can make out of the football club. It's a totally different thing, and the need to realise at Sunderland is that getting some level of success and consistency on the pitch will bring some level of commercial reward, and they'll make, like you say, Martin, they'll make more money finishing higher up the table than they will doing all this stuff.
Yeah,
and they need to focus on that, get that right, and then everything else will come with it. But they've lost. I just think the focus at Sunderland. I think they do get some things right, but at the moment it does feel as though all the focus is on the commercial partnerships. And they'll probably argue, well, we need that commercial partnership to generate the funds to buy the players.
It doesn't seem to be working very well at the moment, does it?
You know, it's not. It isn't happening. It's not happening. And you get the stage where when there's nothing left on the pitch for football supporters, and there's no real trickle down effect as a football supporter going to a game, is there? No. I mean, yeah, the season ticket prices at Sunderland are in the market, reasonably priced. The match day tickets are reasonably priced, but it's still a lot of money.
Not compared to what's on the pitch, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a value versus sort of quality of performance, and I'm not just talking about winning games, like you said, we've had teams that have been rubbish, and you can take it because at least they're putting the effort in. And at the moment, half of these look like they've never seen each other, let alone the football. And, like, I mean, the way Van Aanholt seems to have just... I know he showed flashes of disappearing in games last season, but then seemed to settle down when he had Wes Brown alongside him, sort of holding his hand. And it's not even just the wandering around the pitch now, though. It's just the standing there and players running past him.
And that's important as well, isn't it? Because it's like, if you remember, like, Michael Gray was as fluent going forward as Van Aanholt, but, like, when they put Schwartz there to kind of like babysit him, and he used to like drop in, and you know, like there's no one doing that. Like, if you're going to have that player, then it's obvious that tactically you need to have like Rodwell just like not going forward, or whoever not going forward, but not somebody who's going to split the center of midfield. And I mean, the third goal is just like on Saturday was just ridiculous. It's like it was like schoolboy that. Take a throw in and like one player marking two men, all you have to do is like piggy in the middle round them, you know, and then the third goal goes in. It's
every set piece as well. The short corner, you know, there's one man there, he just plays it short, cuts in, pings a shot in, Pantelimon parries it straight into him, and it's a goal. And it's like, that's far too easy. It's basic.
We've got no cover at left back either, so
no, we've got nothing.
Van Aanholt's like got nothing to worry about, has he really? I mean, we could play a Jones on his wrong foot.
He's bad enough on his right foot. So
Matthews, I guess it's Matthews there, but there'll be question marks over him as well. I think with Van Aanholt, it's a real shame, because I thought he was a real positive. He was a real positive last season.
He was at times.
And he can defend. He can do it.
Yeah,
I've seen him do it. But whatever it is, if it's confidence, I don't know.
When his head's not in it, though, we've seen him have bad games, and it was definitely the beginning of last season. His concentration was pretty shocking, and it was definitely, there was a point where Brown and O'Shea were back together at the heart of defence, and that helped him a lot. And I mean, we've mentioned O'Shea. I mean, he's got to play next weekend. If Quartus is brought in as this sort of young player to bring through, well, he's certainly not offered any more in the way of mobility.
And speed.
No, nothing like. And it's not just pace chasing players, it's with the ball at your feet. He's really slow to make decisions, and makes his distribution poor. And again, you've got some sympathy for him because the midfield's pretty much non-existent, so there's nothing to aim for there. But at the same time, he's got to be better. And that back four is probably not even arguably, at the moment it is without a doubt the worst in the division. I mean,
and all the players that played well towards the end of last season, or that normally put in a shift when we're not very good, like the Catamulls and the Larsons and the O'Shea's, and these players that people said we should have been replacing for years that we know are like decent pros, but they just need more quality around them. They're not even playing
well.
No,
that's the scary part.
They're the ones that you expect like 7 out of 10 every week, and we know what the new players, we're not sure what they're capable of consistency wise and stuff. But those players, I mean, obviously O'Shea hasn't played, but like, you know, Catamull and Larson.
It's alarming watching them.
Also, I mean, like, what's the manager being promised in talks when he agreed to stay? He wouldn't have gone through this whole sort of poker scenario of like going and coming back, and if he wasn't like promised X, Y, and Z, and we haven't got long to deliver that X, Y, and Z now, you know.
And that would be it, though. I mean,
I wouldn't blame him, you know, if he walked.
And he's got to take some blame for what's going on as well. I mean, the formation, the system, tactics, whatever. But at the same time, you could have put any 11 out, and if you don't bother doing something like tracking runners off throw-ins and stuff, it just doesn't matter. It really doesn't. I personally wouldn't have gone with that 11, but then you think, if you go 4-4-2, you think you might get a bit more out of Defoe. Unfortunately, we haven't really got the wingers to play 4-4-2. But then we haven't really got anyone to play in a 4-3-3 either. And you start scratching around thinking, actually, you look at the balance of players we've got, and it's not really great for anything, is it?
That's what I'm saying. There hasn't been
what they're going to do with it
in any sort of rational
There's
way.
There's no coherence about
whatsoever.
It whatsoever.
We're saying that the manager, of course, you know, we've seen, a few people have said you wouldn't blame the manager if he walked and stuff. But like Craig's just said, he isn't blameless in this because
he's admitted as much himself, to be fair to him.
4-4-2 is minging, if you haven't got the players for it.
Yeah.
It's been minging for years, and it was minging on Saturday, and it was just so uninspiring watching that flat midfield with hardly any movement or any fluidity. It was depressing, wasn't it?
What I don't get is, and we've seen this across a number of teams, is why don't we match teams up when we're struggling? That's a basic thing. Like, if you want to stop the opposition from playing, you can see where the spaces are. Yeah, like, why don't they match it up? If you play 4-4-2 against a 4-1-4-1, you're in trouble straight away because they've got three man every time. It's one pass out, and then he's got the whole pitch in front of him. And you've taken two men out of the game.
Unless you've got loads better players than them.
Yeah,
and then you've got the ball all the time, and then they have to, like, change
to you. Well, that was happening, They actually started, they were pressing quite a lot more at the start of the game. But the thing is, as the game gradually grew 10-15 minutes into it, we weren't getting near the ball. They had the extra man in midfield all the time, and they were just controlling the game. And then the pressure built. The goal was slightly fortunate, but the pressure had been coming. Mm. The pressure had been building. The goal, I wouldn't say it had been coming, sorry, but it, if it was somebody who was going to take the lead in the game, it was probably Norwich at that point, and they did after a couple of efforts from distance. And then from then it was just capitulation. I mean, it's watching Norwich players walk around Sunderland defenders, which they were. I mean, that second goal was like slow motion.
Yeah.
Like, it was like one of the token gesture lunges from people.
we were talking on the Into the Light show, we were talking to Gary Gowers, a Norwich fan, before the game, and he highlighted
Gary
Steve.
Gary Gowers,
I know. And he highlighted Stephen Whittaker as Norwich's weak link. And we said, well, if Van Aanholt and then our left side, our weak link, something's got to give on that side of the pitch.
Who
and
is unfortunately the, for some us, kind of Anne Robinson pun in there, isn't there?
Well, unfortunately for us, you know.
It was always going to be ours.
Like, are we actually fortunate that this was the easy start of the season that we all rubbed our hands with when the fixtures came out? What would we have done against decent teams? Would it have been 8-0s?
Or would it have been the opposite? Because, all right, we've had a few dismantlings, but sometimes it gives them the kick up the backside to perform. Some of the new players will be thinking, this is what the Premier League's about. Mm. You know, like, I'm always wary of promoted teams early in the season anyway, because it's time and again we've been done by them. You can think back to Bruce being manager and going down to West Brom, and I think Adam Wingy scoring a winner.
Yeah,
I mean, we competed a lot better than we did there. You're probably right, though. I mean, the way we're playing, anyone would just cut through this.
Kicked on from last season, but so should we.
But the only reason we're kicking on is backwards. I mean, you can go through and you start asking questions further back now, like Congerton and his position at the club, and it doesn't matter if you're director of football or a manager. It doesn't matter who it is if there's not some sort of overarching plan. Then it's not going to work, and you start wondering about how have we regressed so far. There's every player we think, right, finally we've got rid of the deadwood, so you can go back a couple of years, like Gardner, Vaughan, people like that, and you think, well, we've not actually improved on that one iota. And then you go a bit further back than that, and you thought, oh, they were much worse than what we had before, when we had sort of Sana and Catamol or whoever.
Cessignon,
talking about getting Sana back, and when Gardner plays against us, he looks like a decent player, you know.
But it's another defensive player, and if they did sign him, say it was a real thing, it would just show you they're desperate for someone who's got some tangible link to the area, because they're the only players that they think they can get, and that would explain the Barini thing again, because they must be really struggling if this stuff's true.
I know,
because I know a transfer can come out of nowhere, but it doesn't really feel like there's much, like, heating up, no irons in the fire or whatever cliche you want to roll out. And I've got some sympathy for Congerton if it's true that he's literally got no money.
If he has got no money, they need to come out and say that, you know, like all summer there's been the kind of hint that we will be strong enough, and people like Larson and Catamol have been rolled out during season tickets sort of sales pitches about how we're aiming for middle table. I mean, I know no one ever says we're aiming for fourth bottom, but at the same time, you know, they were saying, with the investment in the new manager and the manager coming back, etc., you know, it's I mean, obviously it's really depressing, and one win on Saturday or one win last Saturday could have, you know, made this a different show. But I think it's a bit. I think also it's only two games into the season to play devil's advocate, and like the press are already like ringing me up this morning saying like, can you do some interviews about whether the manager should be sacked or not? You know,
oh God.
And it's just like, well, how where? You know,
That's just like ridiculous. I mean, if he did walk out, and like you say, that could be the moment, the end of the transfer window. Mm. If we haven't brought in anything like even just a couple of bodies, let alone quality, he'd be well within his rights to say, I didn't sign up for this, I'm off.
Do you think he will?
Well, I think the board really need to listen to him, because I think if you look at the dynamics of the board, the people who are involved in it, you know, Gary Hutchison does a good job in terms of, yeah. I know he's not like the sort of decision maker board member, but he's doing well commercially, doesn't know anything about football. Margaret Byrne hasn't got a football background. Ellis Short didn't know anything about football when he met Niall Quinn, you know, which is probably why he bought the club.
Yeah.
You know, and like, there's only for Congerton to say, like, oh, this guy's capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to, like, either all believe him. But time and time again, you know, he keeps bringing in people like Rodwell and, you know, signings that don't work, Alvarez and stuff. You know, maybe they were influenced by Poyet.
Yeah.
But I think we've seen that Advocat's, like, a good manager historically, not just in the last however many games at Sunderland last year. So I think the board need to listen to him and back him. And if he does walk, then there's going to be like bedlam on, isn't there, really? You know?
The issue they've got, though, is how much more money can they spend?
Well, none, judging by what we're hearing.
They can't.
But it's just an excuse not to spend money, isn't it? This financial fair play thing. Let's just pretend, you know.
I don't think it is.
Who's really getting fined, you know?
But it's a different thing, isn't it? The Premier League wage cap and the Europe UEFA one, it's two different things.
Well,
I don't think anyone's
spent more money than,
because they haven't spent it on a load of crap like
that's
we
the
did
like in the past.
We are weighed down by Man City
get rounded by like their owners investing in the sponsorships. So why doesn't Ellis Short?
I was having this conversation.
Why doesn't one of Ellis Short's companies sponsor the stadium?
Yeah.
Like that's an easy way to get out of it.
Maybe on the flip side, he doesn't want to put any more money in as well.
Yeah, well, he needs to come out and say that before we all buy our bloody season tickets.
67% of the turnover is the wage bill, and eighth highest in the Premier League. I mean,
well, the fact that that's the eighth highest wage bill in the league, just take any other numbers out of the game, and that is a joke.
If you look at the facts, whilst he's been in charge, any decent player's been sold at a profit. You know, so like that's the other side of the coin, that we haven't spent loads of money on players. Like we might be overspending on wages, but we still get better crowds than people. I know the ticket prices are cheap, but you know, so
but the commercial commercial revenue again, like. Teams who get less than us will get three times as much money in on it. Like if you look at Chelsea, they'll get less people than us every week, but they'll make three times as much. Stoke and Swansea. I know, but
these clubs,
they're not.
They've got half the size stadiums though, what we've
and they
got,
can't
but
be charging.
But
like
I just don't think they're comparable in some respects
because they're properly run.
Well, well, Palace weren't, were they?
Well, a lot of the stuff.
I mean, the Palace nearly went out of business.
Playing basic recruitment, a lot of it, though, isn't it? We've touched on it before.
That's it, yeah.
You know, you can say all this, and you can try and like pretend that Stoke are like light years ahead of Sunderland, and on the field they probably are, but realistically, Sunderland are probably only three players away from that.
If they're in the right positions
or under the right players.
We have plenty of
Premier League standard players who would be better with better players.
I think there's problems a bit deeper rooted than that.
But you look at that though, Craig, and you look at people like Gardner leave and go on and do fine where he is. And Wickham's probably going to go on and do fine where he is because there are better squads. And this is what I'm saying.
Well, that's part.
We have plenty of international players and stuff, but we haven't got a cohesive side in any way.
I agree with that.
Because there's no pattern there.
But
then it comes down to improving the spine of the side again.
And that's recruitment, like you've said.
Exactly.
But it's more than that. There's something wrong. Like the squad is tiny. How can the wage bill be that high? There's no bodies left in that squad. So how much money are we paying? I mean, Jermaine Defoe, like, nothing against him particularly. I don't think he's been terrible for us at all. He's done as much as he can in the setup that he's played in. Well, not
everybody. Like he's bothering his arse very much at the minute, though.
Well, no worse than any of the others. But then you think, why sign him in January on that length of contract on 70 grand a week? If the wage bill's such a problem, it's these short-term answers to long-term problems, and it snowballs. I mean, we've been talking about it off air for a couple of days, like since the game, and stuff like the Di Canio debacle, then it's Poyet, and then O'Neill's probably not on the wage bill anymore because he's got another job. And you're like, people at the time say, oh, it doesn't matter because if you sack them, the payoff's made up for by the revenue of the TV money. But then they're the same people who are saying, well, we're getting all this TV money, why aren't we buying players? Well, because we're spending it all on managers we've sacked. And it's just this big black hole that all the money's getting sucked into because of mismanagement.
I think Defoe was the cherry on top of the cake, really. I mean, you know, it was clear there was a situation because that's the only player that they signed in January.
Yeah. Altidore wasn't on, like, nothing either, was he?
No, that's a good point.
I know he's on more wages. No. I think just getting rid of Altidore was worth bringing.
But I do wonder if that wasn't it.
And he probably technically scored enough goals and the goals that he did score to keep us up.
Yeah,
you know, let's face it, can you see Altidore scoring that goal that he scored against Newcastle?
No, and it's an interesting...
Or even scoring a goal.
It's a good point. That's a really good debate, the Defoe one, because I was just saying to Craig off air as well, I'd made some notes, and I made that very point myself. I said, had it not been for Defoe, we probably would have been relegated. Mm. He's one of the few players at the moment who you think would get you a goal and probably one of the better players yet. There's no getting away from the fact he wasn't a centre-forward that we needed.
And he still isn't the centre-forward that we need.
It's an interesting one, isn't it?
But that's another problem, Martin, because the longer it drags on, say he does go right, the longer this drags on, we can't line up any kind of replacement or a better option. And someone told me we were contemplating giving Fletcher a new contract. I mean, if that happened...
Could there be a strategy where we don't lose Wickham by making him sign that deal? I mean, it's just worrying that with all these internationals, that like what more that everyone's been saying for ages, give him a chance. He comes in and he looks like the hungriest. You know, like I know his goal was a bit like jammy, but like if you don't shoot, you don't score.
Yeah.
You know.
Aye.
He was fearless.
Just
you know,
purpose in his play.
He embarrassed all those like seasoned international pros with, you know, basically
10 minutes of running around. Yeah. My worry for him would be that a bit of a McLean situation would develop. I mean, not in terms of sort of arseholeness that goes alongside it,
turning into a political genocidal idiot.
The fact that, you know, the fans were well up for him coming on and he comes on and he does look quite good. There's a bit of endeavour which makes him a bright spark. So he gets started for a couple of games and he does well again. And then a couple of months down the line, he gets sucked in by the black hole of dross that's around him and suddenly everyone's on his back again. And
obviously, you've got to use him sparingly, but it just shows that, like, when we haven't signed the players, like, why not... Like when you put new energy in any situation in the workplace, you know what I mean? Not just on a football field. Somebody comes in, like, and it gives everybody a bit of a boost. And I think
I agree with that.
They need to start looking at themselves, you know, like seriously, if he's the major impact in the game.
Well, on the subject of Defoe, though, like as playing devil's advocate, yes, it's revisionist and it's based on ifs and buts. It's not based on the fact. Yes, he came and scored a few goals and we stayed up. What if we could have easily sold out the door to the MLS?
I'm not sure. I think part of the deal was because the way their structures set up that we had...
Somebody else would have taken him, though.
Yeah.
Somebody else, they would have got farmed to a different team. But anyway...
We
quite possibly could have got rid of out the door on his own, right? Mm. So what if instead of buying a player that doesn't fit any of the system that you play and ends up costing the manager his job, which it did, and then you don't have to change managers and then you don't have to play him left of the front three. Why don't you buy a player that fits in the system? Well, and then he might do better than one that doesn't fit at all.
Well, that's what we're saying, isn't it? So then you look at Congerton.
Well, the thing, and also on the subject of Congerton, the fact that he's the only football person on the board or involved in the running of a club... Mm. You can say anything to a load of people who don't know about football in a convincing fashion and make them think that you know more than you do.
Well,
who's pulling him up on what he's doing?
Well, certainly Defanti got away with it for a little while, didn't he? And I mean, Congerton's obviously got a bit more of a background than
he was a qualified coach.
And he was at Hamburg, Hamburg have been a mess similar to ours for quite some time, and I'm not saying that's entirely his fault.
I think he went into Hamburg in a very similar situation as to what he came in.
And they've flirted with relegation pretty much every season for as long as I can remember. I mean, don't take a huge interest in the Bundesliga, but whenever I look at it, they're involved in some kind of relegation.
They're probably quite comparable to Sunderland.
They're a bigger club
from a historical perspective.
There's a lot of people in football that kind of move around every couple of years and get away with actually not being found out for being how useless they are. But most of them seem to end up at Sunderland Football Club.
But there is a real problem. Is with Shorten, I know the songs are coming out at the weekend, and you can understand why. I mean, we were talking about it before the game. A lot of us were saying if it goes badly today, then people will turn, and it didn't take long because invariably it did go badly, because you've seen they're very capable of doing that. This team are very capable of doing that.
But there was still that, even though we'd lost terribly at Leicester, there was still that kind of like first game season buzz. Before the match.
Yeah, there was.
I was like there in ALS from like 11 o'clock, and people were like sort of up for it, and I was thinking actually they're going to be sticking the knife in before it starts, but it was like there was a nice atmosphere, and then
there was
obviously long, you know, it doesn't take long exactly, those two goals. And then I mean, how does everyone feel about excuse me, there's been obviously quite a lot of things on the national press and on Twitter and stuff about Sunderland fans getting criticised for leaving early,
but I think it was disgusting, to be honest. I thought, like, because it was firstly, it was based on a lie, because people didn't walk out before half time en masse, like they were talking.
People went for a pint because they were fed up.
Five minutes to go at half time.
I mean, happens quite a lot anyway.
Exactly. All you do is show a shot of it. It just shows how, like, that lie, like a picture tells us that. No, it doesn't, because the context means everything. Yeah. And every week that happens at Premier League grounds around the country. They just don't put the story on them.
For Gary Lineker to go on Twitter and criticise Sunderland fans, somebody who gets paid millions of pounds to watch football for free, to go and have a go at people, he doesn't have to sit there and go through that. This has been going on for... It's not Sunderland fans overreacting as well, knee-jerking after two games. Yeah. This is a continuation of a problem that began 4 years ago when Martin O'Neill left, or probably when the start of Martin O'Neill's first full season in charge. Probably you could probably even trace it back to Bruce when Bruce was sacked, and that summer before Bruce
left when he bought 14
players. I mean, it goes back that far, and it hasn't been good. We've had three seasons at home and we've won 10 games or something ridiculous like that. This is a continuation of a problem, and it gets to the stage where you can have a go at fans. Well, fans should be fans and they should stay there through thick and thin till the end and all this. Sunderland fans have gone on too long supporting blindly a load of garbage, and it's totally out of order for people to start having a go, especially this thing about laughing at other team supporters and having a go. Like, you know, tell you what, I mean, I don't know when it started or whatever.
Who else gets like 40,000?
Exactly.
You know, just because Palace have like a few flags and some idiots in the corner thinking that they're hardcore, like, you know.
Who are they?
You know what I mean?
This whole thing is around the support thing, and the narrative is very interesting if you look at the two northeast clubs locally. In how, and I'm not saying one are biased and to one club or whatever, but if you look at the way that the two clubs are reported on, when Newcastle are in plight, perceived plight, their plight is that they aren't. Their plight is that they're. Sorry.
We're just whispering in
the corner. All right, you're putting us off.
Their
plight is that they're not in the Champions League every season, and they're not in the Europe every season. That's their plight, and it's a disgrace that they aren't in that. Ours, because we're garbage, apparently, it's funny, for starters, because there's all this mocking sort of, aren't Sunderland rubbish, ha, ha, ha. Oh, more booze at the stadium, like lol banter. Thanks for that, mate. You go in there and you laugh at us.
They've had it as well, man. I mean, there is a...
No, it's not, though. It's different.
No,
because
but when they went down
like,
They deserve better,
apparently. Do we not?
Well, I think...
After 4 years of crap. Yeah. We deserve better than getting made fun of for people leaving games.
No,
stats there. We've won 14 games at home in the last three seasons. So, like, why?
Why would you keep going?
Like, you know, and if it was a meal that was crap, Like, would you sort of continue to eat it until the end, or would you just, like, leave, send
it back?
If you treat
people like customers, they'll begin to become customers.
I've been saying this for a long time.
Are customers now.
Like, a long time. And I said it, and I still love going, and my enjoyment of going is, it's like, you know, it's waning to a point of breaking. Look, I was sat there being extremely negative during the game. Don't get us wrong. I obviously had a couple of beers beforehand. And a couple of people had a go at me as the left, saying, oh, I hope you're not sat there next week and stuff. I want to slip my wrists and that, because I'd been negative, and I was just thinking, like, I was going to slip my wrists watching it. Like, I know, like, it can be annoying when you're around people like that, but I'm not usually like that. Like, I'm generally fairly positive. There's nothing left to take a positive out of.
So you were probably really looking forward to the game.
Exactly.
And then it's like the disappointment. You're allowed
sick.
It. And I wouldn't criticise anyone for leaving.
No, well, ironically, I stayed till the end. They left. I stayed and they left.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I mean, but the thing is, we've seen this happen, the collapse, these collapses in the last few years. Well,
it's not even an interesting story anymore, is it? It's like, sack the manager, beat the mag, stay up. And then the manager we get in is like mint, but then a couple of games into the season, actually realise that he's not, so they sack him.
There was worrying signs of that this summer. Not a slight on Advocat particularly, but I remember listening to Into the Light podcast and Proctor saying, and probably yourselves, not a dig at all, just like, well, he's done as well as anyone. He's done really well to get them motivated. And my mind was just rolling back to 12 months earlier, and exactly the same stuff was being trotted out about Gus
Poyet. You can only comment on what's happening at the time.
No, that's right, it's not a dig. But my point is more that this was almost inevitable, that it just wasn't going to work the way people thought. People were like, he's the biggest signing.
People thought that was going to be married with new key signings,
though.
If somebody had said, OK, Advocat's staying, but he won't be making any significant signings, I don't think people would have been shouting from the rooftops.
I've just been the most wary I've been for many a summer. The season before, I wasn't particularly optimistic, and I let myself get carried away maybe as the season approached. But I've had not really... I was looking forward to Leicester, because it was a good day out with your mates and all that, and but my optimism's been...
I also don't like the sort of advertising campaign that the club had, where it was like, he signed up, have you? But like, if it had actually been someone interesting who'd signed up, it was like, you know, Cabal, who played like 8 times last season. Like, we know that, like, he's not going to be fit, that his knees are gone. So play him alongside a speedy centre-half.
Which we won't ever buy.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
Well, it took us about 6 years to buy a fullback, and then we've got the ones we've got now. So maybe in 6 years' time,
maybe he had a race with Wes Brown and won it, so we signed him.
Well, I noticed a picture of Advocat, and in the background, Wes Brown was stood there in the sort of like a polo shirt, club polo shirt. Is he being signed on as some kind of coach or
leader?
Because that's another example of like, why was he given a new contract? I don't know what kind of money they've given him, but if we've got no money to sign players that we badly need in the first team, what's he doing hanging around the club?
I think he's on a paper play kind of.
Who did we let go?
Well,
instead,
Virginie
Reviere.
Well,
a right back.
He didn't fancy him at all, did he?
No,
he was good at left back as well.
He could play both sides.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I'd forgotten about Reviere.
He didn't fancy Virginie either, did he? You know, but
I mean, I've got not saying Virginie. We've had this discussion again off air and like groups of mates. Like Virginie, he wasn't a world beater. I enjoyed watching him because at least it was a bit of entertainment, and he wasn't as bad as as this narrative's led people to believe. Tell me how letting him go when we were forced to sign him, and then bringing in Quartez essentially as a straight replacement was a good piece of business. What was that? What's that about?
I think Advocat just likes that kind of solid, no nonsense centre half, you know, and that's obviously the type of.
Well, I've seen a lot of nonsense. But I mean, for him to come out at the weekend afterwards and say, "Oh well, we need to show the grit and determination that we did last season." Go on, then. How can you come out and say that?
He's all about Quartez, yeah. And the gaffer's saying, like, don't blame the chairman. But, like, that's what we've, you know, that's... I mean, obviously, in 2 weeks' time, it might all be great if he brings in, like, three decent players,
happen,
you know.
Let's face it, you know.
Say Leroy Fayed come in, because he was the other one that obviously wanted.
But then he's just played for, like, relegated clubs, hasn't he?
What's his attitude like? You know, is he another one, like... And Villa, like, I know you
he's
thought
a good
he...
dancer, like, did you watch the, his wedding video?
No, I haven't seen that. It's good. That ascends it. might be a bit of light entertainment I can watch during the Swansea game. But, yeah, fair, whatever. He looks like the type of player that, again, was he going to be a bit of a Rodwell? He wasn't a creative player, in my mind. Is it just sniffing around for what we can find?
Who will come?
And they're all invariably going to have bad attitudes,
might go
I think.
From now, would you be surprised if I saw something else and go back from? Is it, I'm blaming this on Van Aanholt's performance because it's his cousin and his dummies went out.
He wanted his mate there.
Well,
it's just down tools.
But what about Mvilla, right? There's a player who...
I think he looked okay on Saturday.
Well, that performance aside, I was a bit worried about him coming in, thinking, I mean, obviously he got that red card, which he couldn't have predicted, but he went to Inter Milan, who've done nothing for ages and had zero impact there. And obviously the stuff in Russia, there's obviously other problems, so fair enough, but you think, there's a player who's obviously lost his way. Now, another club you might think, Stoke, Swansea, whatever, come in, wow, they get a... We're not that club, are we? We're the one who takes the troubled player on, and then they cause a load of trouble for us. Yeah. And it was that red card in the under 21 game. I mean, what? Lock up your windscreen.
Everything.
Rear the upside windows.
Lock up everything. Yeah, we could bring Bentner back.
I love that.
Let's bring him back. Bring him back.
More good attitudes.
I just thought he was really lazy.
I really like Bentner. Tell you something,
scored,
right?
He scored 8 goals. In a season, now if you say, can you bring a striker in who's going to score 8 goals, you go, aye, all right then.
Another example, though, of the regression that's gone on, whether you thought he was good or not, we've signed worse players than him ever
since.
That's a scary thing. We do every season, though,
every time somebody will put a list on the internet at the end of the season and go, just before, a week before the season starts, a list a load of the players who've gone, and then the players who've come in instead, and it'll be all like, well, an instant upgrade.
Well, it was
for
Gomez,
less money. For less money, he's better. It's like, and then after two games, it's like, oh no, the garbage.
Gomez was that. Oh,
that's
summer one. Should have gone
as well, isn't it? Because like, they never like, actually published the real, like the real fees. I noticed when I was watching Match of the Day the other night, the Palace sort of press people had obviously told Match of the Day that like they'd paid $6 million for Wigan, so they're trotting it out as six. We're trotting it out as getting our money back. So
it's probably somewhere in the middle.
And then you don't have to declare on your accounts, do you? It's just over.
Didn't we say it was didn't Hull say that we bought Michael Michael Turner for $12 million in the end, and it was like four or something like that. I remember like there was
really odd.
Like
I think it was 12 if he'd played 100 times for England and won the World Cup as captain.
I think Sky said that we paid like $12 million for Christian Rivera. So I think they were saying that like when we signed
him. God, there's a blast from the mediocre past.
Yeah, I know. Well, and
we'd still be an upgrade on what we've got.
Probably would be an upgrade on what we've got.
But well, that one was a classic, wasn't it? Gomez, when he was coming in, he's going to be this upgrade on Gardner and that. And it's like, which one of them is going to be in the relegation battles? I mean, I don't think Gardner was a particularly good player, but somehow we've managed to sign worse players than him. Mind boggles.
I mean, I think your point, Martin, about why aren't the players in for the start of the season when we signed them via, I think it was Wednesday, before the kick-off, and it's now Monday night.
Yeah, and then
they've got to get some players in somehow.
So that's what happens, though, isn't it? There's always this rush before the start of the season, and then nothing happens. Obviously, the season starts at different parts of August, depending on World Cups and stuff. Yeah. And then there's like nothing happens, and then sort of 4 days before. So it's all going to happen either side of the Villa game. But if we lose against Swansea on Saturday, people are going to go like, well, played three, lost three. I don't want to go there. Yeah. They're already bottom of the league. So, like, it's really important to win that game. Or I put in a decent...
Well, Villa, I mean, God.
Could be double figures against Swansea if they defend.
I think about it being quite poor.
But think about what they did to us last season and they weren't any good then either, were they? It's the pace.
You're almost hoping that they have to buy Alvarez. Just because then they've got another body in the squad to
even
use.
He's rubbish.
We don't know if he's any good because he was injured all the time. He had about two good games, and
I think he's still having nightmares about like the mud at Bradford. Isn't he?
Yeah, they'll be at Seaburn every week. Just
remember that photo of all the Dear Kate, Moberg, Carlson, G, all on the key side. Jaggerini, what a motley crew that was. Moberg, Carlson.
Remember when everyone thought he was going to be great?
Oh, Jesus.
That Carlson, he scored a goal in the muck Spurs against Spurs.
Instant upgrade on
Darren Benn.
Yeah, it was. And then he came on, he played against MK Dons and he could trap a bag of cement.
he started that game, absolutely horrific, and he made G look good.
And he never kicked the ball again after that. Dear me. Class or something.
You've got to laugh about it, haven't you?
Well, if you didn't, then you'd
laugh or cry. That thing. Well, it's a shame to bring this to an end. I think Chapsworth, we've got through 50 minutes there already. We could go on, but we can't really because we've got stuff to do.
It was kind of like therapy, wasn't it? Really,
that's what we always say. It's kind of therapeutic, isn't it? That's why I was looking forward to today a little bit because it's got past the point where you're depressed about it
but it's almost past that point
where it becomes funny in a way.
It is beyond parody at this point.
I've been waking up angry honestly it's that bad.
You need to let go, man.
I know. I woke up this morning, I was checking my phone going like, I need a positive story from Sunderland this morning. Please give me something.
You're just hoping that there's something
with someone reasonable. Yeah. Or...
you're just hoping there's something that's just going to come from the left field, don't you? To take us all by surprise.
That'll be something really horrible.
Yeah. It'll be a Phil Babb, that's what it'll be. Can you remember that? We're signed an international player. We're going to announce him at 5 o'clock.
That's what happened then, wasn't it? That's what happened then. Peter Reid had a good core and a good spine of a team. These players started leaving, Hutchison and stuff, and they brought in McAtee, and the replacements weren't
as
good.
Didn't work.
And that's what happens.
But it is harder, even like I was saying before, even if you're a good player, to come in and do a job in a dysfunctional team, which is what we are at the minute. You know, I think if we'd been doing really well and Lenz was on the bench and you come on, like a 2-0. Like for 10 minutes to come on and like show some tricks and that would be perfect, wouldn't it?
I reckon we'll get Michu on loan. There's my prediction.
God, I forgot he existed.
That would be a pure Sunderland signing. Go, he was quite good 2 years ago. Mm. Let's take a chance on him, even though nobody's touching with a barge pole for 18 months. Not even Swansea will entertain him, and we'll get him and we'll play him as like in the number 10,
and he'll be knackered after 1 week.
Aye.
Both his knees
and he'll be doing that you know what I'm doing if you hear that. He'll be doing what Lenz was doing when that Mahrez put that penalty in the back of the net and wishing that he was in war-torn Ukraine. That's what he'll be doing.
That's what we drive our players to. Okay, thanks for your time this evening, gents. I'm going to wrap that up there. I don't really want to see. I've got nothing to go out on. Thanks for listening. Over and out.